romance. Transcribed stories of love and adventure, of comedy and crisis, of conflict and human emotion. Today, a remarkable story from the life of that redoubtable British soldier, Private Bert Johnson. And we welcome the author, Mr. Anthony Ellis, as our narrator. Now, starring Ben Wright, we present The Other Side of Johnson.
Now, all this took place quite a long time ago. To be exact, the late 19th century. The place was India, and it concerned Private Bert Johnson of the Queen's Own Rifles. Johnson was the scourge of his regiment. Sergeant Major Cutts said so.
Johnson! You're no bloody good to me, you're no bloody good to the army, and you're no bloody good to England. I've had just about enough out of you. This time you're for it, my lad. 30 days solitary, bed and water. Prisoner and escort, by the right, quick, march! Look right,
Sergeant Major Cutts said this sort of thing quite often. Now, Colonel Waite was possibly a little less colorful in his language concerning Private Johnson, but no less positive.
Disgrace! A disgrace to the regiment. I won't have it, you hear me? I will not have it! One more such incident, Johnson, and I'll have you court-martialed and shot.
The list of Johnson's wrongdoings filled 3 finely written ledgers in the regimental clerk's office, and his exploits were legendary from Madras to the Khyber Pass. For example, there was the matter of the commander-in-chief's visit to the northwest frontier. It involved, among others, the commander-in-chief, Raja Abkar Singh, the Raja's 7th daughter by his 5th wife, Bidar, and, of course, Private Bert Johnson. This is how it happened.
Sergeant Major!
Yes, sir.
Message from headquarters. The commander-in-chief arriving to inspect the frontier next week. Raja Abkar Singh's already been notified. There'll be a function, a ball. I want you to choose a guard for the occasion, Sergeant Major.
Yes, sir.
30 men, 40, if you can find them. Tallest we have, the best soldiers, smartest. You follow me?
I'll follow you, sir.
I might also inform you, Sergeant Major, that it's not beyond the realm of possibility that an attempt might be made to assassinate the general. It'll be up to you and your men to guard him wherever he goes.
Yes, sir.
In particular, they must be tall. Over 6 feet. The general seems to think the British army is made up of giants. And if it isn't, it should be.
Not too many over 6 feet, sir.
Find them. Drill them. I leave it up to you, Sergeant Major.
Yes, sir.
And under no circumstances do you pick Private Johnson. You follow me, Sergeant Major.
I follow you, sir.
Now, normally, these last orders of the colonel would not have caused Private Johnson the slightest embarrassment. But it also happened that the Raja Abkar Singh's daughter, Bidar, had seen Johnson at the marketplace of Peshawar. She had admired his stalwart youth, his towering height, and in no time at all had grown exceedingly fond of him. But the English soldier had accepted Bidar's feelings and returned them. And when the news of the commander-in-chief's visit reached her, and the plans for the ball were made, she said to Johnson in their secret meeting place,
"My star, my king, if only you were an officer, then we could be together at the ball."
"I know, Biddy, but I'm not an officer and I ain't likely to be one. Besides, I won't even have a chance to see you there."
"But I heard there was to be a guard for the general. A tall guard."
"That's right, but not me."
"They will not choose you?"
"Nah. I told you about our sergeant major. He's jealous. He's afraid I'll show him up and the colonel will give me his job."
"I will tell my father, and he will talk to the colonel, and you will be chosen in the guard."
No. I don't think you'd better. Regulations, you know. Can't go against army regulations, Biddy."
"Oh, I would so like to have seen you there, and perhaps afterwards we could have..."
"I know. It's not much fun having to creep out and meet like this. But you wouldn't half get it if your dad found out, and they'd hang me from the Taj my bloody all. It's a crime 2 people feel the way we do, and we can't spend no time together."
"Kiss me, Bert."
Don't mind if I do.
From that moment, Private Johnson knew that if he did no other thing in his life, for the sake of Bidar, he must become a member of the Commander-in-Chief's Honor Guard. And when he'd made up his mind to do this, it was only a matter of forcing the issue, which he proceeded to do.
Oi, sir, Major. What do you want, Johnson? I'm busy.
You, making up the list for the Honor Guard, eh?
It's none of your ruddy business.
Begging permission to volunteer for the Honor Guard, sir, Major.
You what?
I want to be in the Honor Guard, that's what.
Oh, chase me your pimento tree.
You're going to bust your guts, are you, Major?
Johnson, I wouldn't put you in that honor guard if I was to have me head boiled in oil.
Why?
Take me a week to tell you, and I haven't got the time. Clear out, Johnson. I'm busy.
That your final word, Sergeant Major?
That's my final word.
All right. Ta-ta, Sergeant Major.
Well, the men were picked, and the drilling began. They were separated from the regiment and ate, slept, and worked as a solitary unit. For days, all went well. And then, the day before the general was to arrive, something happened.
Oi, so, Major.
What do you want, Johnson?
You better come and have a look at your honor guard.
Why, what's the matter with them?
They got the pip.
What are you talking about, Johnson?
They got the pip. You had them all nicely by themselves, drilling, eating, and sleeping, but you should have had them eating with the rest of us.
Have you been up to something, Johnson? If you had...
No, it wasn't me done it.
Done what?
Give them the pip. Poison, if you ask me.
Poison?
That's right, they're all laying around groaning and squealing something horrible. You better have a look.
Which Sergeant Major Cudd did, to his dismay. 30 of the finest of the Queen's own rifles were rolling about in varying degrees of agony. Whatever the illness was, it had struck with the rapidity of a cobra. And although the results were not as deadly, they were no less debilitating. It was quite obvious that the General's honor guard was out of action.
What do you mean they're sick, Sergeant Major?
That's what they are, Colonel. The old blinking lot.
What is it? Fever?
I don't know, sir. I don't know. They had the noonday meal, and then as far as I can tell, a half hour later, it was all done with it. It was Private Johnson told me about him.
Johnson? Johnson told you?
Yes, sir. Suggested they might have been poisoned.
He did it. He did it. Johnson did it to him.
That's what I think, sir. But I've got a fat chance of proving it, and if you don't mind my saying so, so have you, sir.
But why? Why? Why would he do it?
Probably his sense of humor, sir. Just for a lark. You know Johnson.
Which, as is already known, wasn't exactly the case. It is true that Private Bert Johnson obtained an extremely powerful herb known for its purgative qualities, its lasting effects. It's also quite true that he administered the herb to the guard's food by the very simple expedient of bribing one of the native cooks. But it was certainly not done just for a lark. The colonel sat deep in thought for a moment. And then he said,
I've got two choices, Sergeant Major.
Yes, sir.
Two. Either pick our best men, regardless of height, or take a chance on who's left.
Well, there's 40, sir. If I start with them now, I suppose I could whip them into shape.
You think you could, huh?
Well, I think so, sir.
Knowing the way the general feels about tall soldiers, it would be better.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right. It's up to you, Sergeant Major.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Major!
Sir.
See that Private Johnson is locked in the guardhouse until after the ball tomorrow.
Well, what'll I charge him with this time, sir?
Treason, spying, murder, I don't care. But put him away. I don't want anything else to happen while a general's here.
Yes, sir. Private Johnson.
Hello, Sergeant Major.
You're under arrest. Stand up.
Sure. What did I do?
Suspicion.
Suspicion of what?
Never you mind. The charges will be read later.
Oh, you're a ruddy marvel, you are, Cuddy. Won't you ever learn?
That's enough of your lip, my man. Prisoner and escort, by the right, quick, march!
Return to romance in just a moment. Say, come on in and listen for the Kathy Godfrey Show today, won't you? Kathy has some people she wants you to meet. And since they're people like Julie Wilson and Steve Lawrence, you'll want to meet them too. Julie Wilson, you know, is now charming Broadway theatergoers with her performance in The Pajama Game. Steve Lawrence is the man with the voice that sends phonograph records spinning right up into the hit brackets in Nothing Flat. So don't miss the Kathy Godfrey Show a little later on today over most of these same stations. And now for the second act of Romance.
Exactly 1 hour after the guardhouse door locked behind Private Johnson, 11 soldiers, each over 6 feet tall, went on sick call. Their symptoms were identical to those suffered by the former elite guard. The fine hand of Johnson stretched far and wide. Well, this left 29 soldiers of the dimensions required by the colonel and, as is common knowledge, an honor guard of 29 for the commander-in-chief of Her Majesty's Indian Army is, well, as the colonel put it to Sergeant Major Cudd...
Impossible! It's an insult! Do you realize the position you put me in, Sergeant Major?
I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry? Good gad, man. Sorry. What good does that do us? You failed me, Sergeant Major. 41 men poisoned, and you let it happen.
What's truth, sir?
Do not interrupt. It's Johnson behind this. Johnson! I want you to have him shot. Tonight.
Sir?
Well, you know what I mean. Take him out somewhere quietly, but shoot him like a dog, Sergeant Major.
I don't think army regulations allow
it. Blast it, Cud. Don't tell me about regulations. Do you realize what this means to me? The commander-in-chief arriving in the morning and no honor guard. I'll be finished. Finished. You'll be finished. Transfer to Aden.
I'll see what can be done, sir.
It's too late. Doesn't matter anymore. I'm done for. You're done for.
Private Johnson.
Who?
Wake up. I want a couple of words with you.
Oh, hello, Cuddy. What's up?
You know bloody well what's up. You poisoned those men I had picked out for the guard.
Me? Poisoned? How can you say such a thing?
If any of those men die, you'll be charged with murder. The colonel's ready to have you shot anyway.
Oh, they won't die, Cuddy. They'll just have to show a belly for a couple of days, but that don't hurt no one.
You admit poisoning them?
I do not. You are a sailor in my honour, Sergeant Major, the honour of a British soldier. I resent it. I heard what was the matter with them.
Heard?
Well, that's all.
You've gone too far this time, Johnson, and that's a fact. The commander-in-chief's arriving in the morning and no guard. Colonel Wait will have you broken, and no mistake.
Oh, well, I don't mind it in here.
You'll be chucked out, Johnson.
Chucked out?
Chucked out of the army. Discharged. Dishonorable.
Boy, Cuddy, are you giving it to me straight?
Straight.
Blimey.
Now, there might be one way for you to put things to rights.
How's that, Sergeant Major?
Behave. Put you on the guard detail, give us a full 30, and you behave.
You mean that?
I've got nothing to lose, neither is the colonel. But you have me, lad. Now, think it over.
Boy, I have.
You have what?
Thought it over. Done.
You'll behave?
Like a blinking angel.
No funny business?
Not a drop.
You'll take my orders?
Like your own son.
All right, Johnson. But heaven help you if you do anything. Heaven help you.
Drilling began. 30 soldiers and only 15 hours to train. That was presuming they could go without sleep. The sergeant major moved the team to the outskirts of the barracks. He didn't want the colonel to know about Johnson and hoped to surprise him when he'd accomplished the impossible. Well, after 12 hours in the dreary gray of morning, a dripping and haggard honor guard were addressed by the sergeant major.
Platoon, at ease. I've done all I can with you. You can have 2 hours sleep now. Now, before you turn in, I want to say a couple of things to you. Men, the honor of the regiment is yours. When the commander-in-chief arrives, he's going to see the finest, straightest, best bloody little guard he's ever seen. You follow me, Johnson?
I'll follow yourself, Major.
At the ball tomorrow night, there'll be the Rajah and his 13 daughters. Some of you may be acquainted with those daughters. Do you follow me, Johnson?
I'll follow yourself, Major.
There will be no fraternizing after the ball, before the ball, or during the ball. Do you follow me, Johnson?
I'll follow yourself, Major.
If I see one man look at a woman, I'll have him on bread and water for 6 months. Do you follow me, Johnson?
Oi, Sergeant Major, what happens if a woman looks at me?
I'll have you arrested, court-martialed, and chucked out of the army. All right. Inspection for the colonel at 7:30. On the guard, fall out!
At 7:30, the colonel made his inspection, and a spark of hope kindled in his breast when he saw the men lined straight as arrows, uniforms and gear fresh and sparkling. Sergeant Major Cudd had performed a miracle. And then the colonel saw Private Johnson at the end of the line.
What's this, Sergeant Major?
This, sir?
What's he doing here? Johnson!
He gave his word, sir. As a British soldier, there'll be no trouble. He gave his word.
Johnson, you shame the regiment in front of the commander-in-chief, and I'll kill you with my bare hands.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
At 11 o'clock, the commander-in-chief arrived at the post. For 2 hours, he reviewed the troops and finally the honor guard. And then his bulldog-like face suddenly relaxed. He turned, smiled at the colonel and said,
"Splendid, Colonel. Splendid. Fine-looking man. A perfect example of the British soldier at his best."
"Thank you, sir."
I congratulate you. Now, how about a bite to eat, what? I'm famished."
At 9 o'clock that evening, in the grand ballroom of the palace of the Rajah Abkar Singh, the lights were bright, the gowns and native costumes bewildering in their beauty, and the uniforms of the soldiers impeccable. The Rajah, a round and affable little man, sat on his throne, and next to him towered the commander-in-chief. All was pomp and circumstance. Private Johnson's post was in front of a window, which, half open, allowed the scented evening air to drift through. As he stood there thinking of Bidar, he heard a voice behind him.
"Bert."
"What?"
"It is your Bidar. Oh, my soul, how beautiful you look."
"Oh, sir, nothing really."
"Can you not join me in the garden?"
"Oh, not a chance, no. Not until maybe for a few minutes when they go into dinner."
"That will be very soon. I shall plead a headache."
"Well, it's risky. Sergeant Major's got his eye on me."
"I cannot wait to feel your lips on mine. I shall go mad if you do not come."
"Yeah, all right. I'll see what I can do, but it'll only be for a couple of minutes. You hang about out there."
"I will."
"Yeah, up it now. Sergeant Major's coming."
"Everything all right, Johnson?"
"Right as rain, Sergeant Major."
"Were you talking to someone, Johnson?"
"Who? Me? Not bloody likely."
"We'll be going in for dinner in a bit. You'll stay here. And no monkey business.
You haven't got a thing to worry about, Sergeant Major.
At 9:30, the assemblage moved to the dining hall, leaving the ballroom empty except for the presence of 10 of the immovable honor guard. At 9:35, Private Bert Johnson backed up 2 steps, slipped behind the curtains, and made his way into the garden in a low hedge.
Over here, my love. Oh, my soul's desire.
Yeah. Bit of all right, eh? But I can't stay.
Perhaps when the ball is over?
Oh, I don't know. Not going to be easy, but I'll work out something.
Oh, do not talk. Kiss me, Bert.
Now, by the oddest coincidence, at that very moment on the other side of the hedge, a certain Duleep Mohammed, dedicated to the murder of the commander-in-chief, was creeping towards the open window of the great dining hall. He represented a faction of Afghan whose main ambition was to clear the northwest frontier of the British, and the commander was their prime target. As Mohammed cleared the far end of the hedge, Johnson developed a slight crick in the neck from his exertions, and in moving from the corner of his eye, he saw the skulking figure. The Afghan was raising his rifle.
Hello. There's trouble. Clear out, Betty.
Oh, but...
Private Bert Johnson, your quick action and heroism in the moment of danger is a fine example of Her Majesty's Indian Army, which I am proud to command. Good show, man. You will be suitably rewarded, I can promise you. Colonel?
Sir?
You must be very proud of this man.
I am, sir. One of our best.
Well, we should manage at least 2 days leave for him, don't you think?
Definitely, sir, definitely.
Well, I see no reason. The ball shouldn't continue. Tell me, Colonel, what is the pig sticking like these days? Hmm? I'm rather hoping to win a spare on my trip up here.
Well, Johnson.
Well, Sergeant Major.
You've left your post, didn't you?
Good thing I did, wasn't it?
What's that ruddy stink? You using perfume, Johnson?
I better get back to my post, Cuddy.
Hold on. You was out in the garden when with one of the Rajah's daughters, wasn't you?
I was in the garden because I was doing my duty. You heard the CIC.
Johnson, you are...
I'm a fine example of Her Majesty's Indian Army, which the CIC is proud to command. Sergeant Major?
Romance is produced and directed by William Frug. The Other Side of Johnson was written by Anthony Ellis, and the redoubtable Mr. Ellis was our narrator. Ben Wright was Private Bert Johnson. Ray Lawrence was the Sergeant Major. Others in our redoubtable cast were Herb Butterfield, Lillian Bayef, and Ramsey Hill. Music is supervised by Jerry Goldsmith. This is Dan Cubberly, inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. Listen in twice every weekend for exciting dramas of Gunsmoke on CBS Radio. Listen just a few moments from now in the daytime when United States Marshal Matt Dillon fights to hold the frontier against spoilers and outlaws. And listen again tomorrow night on most of these same stations for an entirely new story of Gunsmoke in America's early West. Make Gunsmoke a listening habit, and you'll readily appreciate the sentiments of critics who have given this thrilling, realistic program their generous applause. Gunsmoke at the Star's address. Stay tuned for Gunsmoke now. It follows immediately over most of these same stations. Listen for the Kathy Godfrey Show Saturdays on the CBS Radio Network.